Now, turning to the properties of water, which are important in determining the movement of chemicals inside the environment. So we have got the characteristic of it as a solvent. It's a polar solvent, which means that it'll remove polar molecules readily. And in terms of the soil chemistry that we'll move to, we'll see most of our rocks then will have ionic constituents, so we'll be able to transport those ionic constituents. We find in biology, lots of molecules are water soluble, so we're able to transport those things in as nutrients and out as waste. Water's got that high surface tension, which is controlling a lot of animal physiology, tree physiology, and in terms of raindrop, the shape of the raindrop, remember we looked at in first year, it was not a little tear-shaped drop falling down because of the high surface tension of water. Water's got this high latent heat of vaporization, which is controlling the heat transfer from the ocean. It's got a high specific heat capacity. So again, I've changed the symbol here, or put in the symbol in this case so that you start to become familiar with some symbols. So C standing for capacity, S standing for specific, so it's specific heat capacity. In both of these cases, we can have a specific heat capacity or we can have a molar heat capacity. So specific heat capacity is referring to per gram. Okay, if it had C subscript M, it would be the molar one, and it would be the specific, be the heat capacity per mole. Now the heat capacity then is saying how many joules does it take to increase the temperature of 1 gram of material by 1 Kelvin. So this is a large number. So that means our oceans then, if they're sitting at 20 degrees, then it's taking a lot of joules to move that up to 21 degrees. And again, it's extremely important for global climate. If we had the 70% then of the Earth's surface covered in something with a low heat capacity, then the incoming solar radiation would increase the temperature of the oceans quickly. That would very quickly modify the global climate. So we're very fortunate that we've got a lot of the Earth's surface covered with this high specific heat capacity material. The hydrogen bonding we looked at in first year, from that we could understand why water has got a maximum density at 4 degrees C. Remember, it formed those hexagonal open structures with lots of air on the inside of those spaces, and that's the reason it's got a higher density than water at 4 degrees C. The acid-base chemistry of water, it's amphoteric. It can react as an acid or it can react with a base. Now this is important in determining what's going on in water chemistry because in first year we did a lot of stuff on acid-base calculations. We went through some basic sort of electrochemistry stuff. We did the Nernst equation. But we didn't really see too much of the applications into the real world. What we soon find is that it's a combination of acid-base chemistry and redox chemistry that determines what's floating around in a water body. So we have to become completely comfortable with both of these things because these are the dominant sorts of chemistry that are going on in water. And the atmosphere, radical chemistry is important in the upper atmosphere in particular. What was the major chemistry that was going on in the troposphere? What was our key chemical there? No, reactive chemical. Warm. It was very warm. OH dot. The OH radical, yeah. there's a big difference. Hydroxide then, okay, does acid-base chemistry, whereas hydroxyl does radical chemistry. So you guys should put a bit of a star beside the fact that you're going back to the hydroxyl radical and you're getting on top of that, because I've changed the nature of the test a little bit. I'll update you when we get to the tutorial session. I've decided that that question's going to be on aerosols and tropospheric chemistry. We now know that tropospheric chemistry is dominated by the hydroxyl radical. Yeah. It does radical reactions, yes. Yeah.